He was content for the most part to offer his unorthodox prescriptions, to bless his patients, and to sternly advise them to go with God. It is said that he actually did operate at times, but never openly as he had before. He seemed to consider as non-operations, cataracts, abscesses, lipomas, hydroxyles, skin cancer, and others, where the viscera were not involved. These he did, along with his unconventional eye checkup at TM, where he stirred the knife within the socket to remove pus or even a malignant tumor. Kubitschek, as a surgeon as well as president, along with a growing number of other statesmen, intellectuals, scientists, and medical men, spoke openly on the line that Arago was not a police case. Commenting on Arago in later years, President Kubitschek said, "It was impossible in Brazil for him to be alone. The people went where he went. If he had gone to the wildest reaches of the Amazon, they would have followed him there. I just don't yet TMT understand his strength and his extraordinary powers." The most important people in Brazil sought him out at TM. As the months flowed into a year and more, Arago at TMS returned to his old pattern bothered none of the more enlightened, except that they wanted control and observation of Arago. But the smoldering resentment of the church and the medical societies still burned with a glow. These fires had been banked by Kubitschek at TMS pardon and the public elation at Arago at TMS release from the threat of jail. But Juscelino Kubitschek at TMS term was finished. Although he was an inordinately popular man, he could not succeed himself in office. If he could have, it is said, he would still be president, without uttering a single campaign speech. He had completed Brasilia, a lyrical and extravagant monument to his courage and imagination, and even his adversaries came to acknowledge the city as a needed catalyst to the full development of Brasilia TMS interior. But he was no longer president. J. A. Tilda Centenario Quadras was swept in 1960, sweeping himself out again after only 7 months in office, by resignation. Vice President João Goulart took his place, and was to last until 1964, when a military regime took over. Arago at TMS top-level support was gone. Again, the opposition went into action. Again, the press stories were beginning to flow out of Congonhas do Campo with monotonous regularity. Again, Arago was beginning to slip back into doing a few major operations. 138. Again, the stories of their success could not be held in check. Not the least of Arago at TMS new successes came from an incident with the infant son of singer Roberto Carlos. Carlos was the toast of Brazilian entertainers, rivaling, if not exceeding, the popularity of the Beatles in that country. If there had been a popularity poll taken in Brazil, it is likely that the first three figures to be named would have been Pelé, the world-renowned soccer player, Juscelino Kubitschek, and Roberto Carlos, with Arago himself running a close fourth. The new son of Roberto Carlos was born with a serious fulminant glaucoma condition, an intensely acute form of inflammation with total loss of sight and light perception. Roberto Carlos and his wife rushed the baby to specialists in Europe, where the child's TMS condition was diagnosed as incurable. On his return to Brazil, Carlos chartered a plane and flew to Lafayette, and took a car to Congonhas. The details have not been revealed about the surgery that Arago performed, but within days the Infanta TMS site was restored. Carlos became a close friend of Arago at TMS from that time on, and the incident thrust Arago at TMS new activity into more blazing public attention across the country. When pressed about what he was doing after his close brush with jail, Arago would explain, "I believe in love and charity. I cannot deny anyone who comes to me for help. The Bible tells us that when someone knocks, we must open the door to him at TM." Distressed and frustrated about the persecution Arago had faced and might continue to face was the assistant mayor of Congonhas do Campo, Dr. Moura Godoy. He had studied both internal medicine and psychiatry at the University of Brazil in Rio, and continued to practice both specialties. He had had a much better chance to observe Arago in action than all the scores of Brazilian doctors who had investigated him. Godoya TMS office was within shouting distance of Arrigoa TMS clinic, and he often dropped by in his effort to find a scientific rationalization for what he saw. He knew the dangers of drawing attention to Arrigoa TMS new, post-trial activities, yet he was determined to persuade, 139, his colleagues in the medical society to shift their emphasis from persecution to study. He had recorded case after case of Arrigoa TMS surgery, and many of them on operations that were successfully completed in 1/40th or 1/50th of the time required by conventional surgical procedures. As a psychiatrist, he believed that the modern school could benefit greatly by studying primitive techniques. While Arrigoa was anything but a primitive, and stood completely in a class by himself, beyond any known discipline, Godoy was convinced that only an extended, well-funded study could possibly make a dent in solving the puzzle. He reasoned that Arrigoa could do little or no harm to the public because most of his cases had been given up by medical doctors. Godoy had come about his acceptance of Arrigoa TMS work slowly. At first, he ascribed it to some sort of hypnotism, but after 2 years of almost daily observation and study, he ruled this out fully. Arrigoa himself obviously went into a trance state, but the patients were diagnosed and operated on almost instantly, without any eye or word contact, without any suggestion, without preparation a psychological, surgical, or otherwise. Dr. Godoy was also intrigued by the personality profile of the man. He was aware that when he was near Arrigoa at his place of work, he felt a completely different ambience in the room. It was charged with inexplicable emotion. When the knife cut and the blood did not pour out, it was a scene that was impossible to believe. The simplistic answer was that it was a question of mind over matter, but what did that mean? And there was no way whatever of explaining why, of the thousands of cases of surgery Arrigoa had performed, there was not one instance of septicemia, blood poisoning. Dr. Godoy knew from his own practice that any lapse in surgical procedure inevitably brought about this condition. Arrigoa was anything but a simple character. His on-stage and off-stage personalities were widely split. Yet there were no conventional signs of psychosis, whether schizophrenia or paranoia. He was in control of both personalities, depending on which one he became. His ordinary foibles were 140, many and varied. But they did not depart measurably from the norm of acceptable neurosis. His fear of elevators and airplanes was not crippling or devastating to his capacity to work and love. His family life was reasonably normal when he had time for it. His devotion to Arlette was as genuine as hers to him. The entire syndrome about Dr. Fritz and his alleged spirit colleagues was a great imponderable. There were few yardsticks to measure it by. Arrigoa TMS personality change when he assumed this cloak of his psyche was marked and real. Yet when he did, his personality was level and consistent and totally rational within those bounds. The concept of a band of discarnate spirits, all with great medical prowess, all with the capacity of helping Arrigoa with their specialized skills, was of course totally unacceptable in the light of modern science. To the cardiac spiritists, however, this was old hat. At times, Dr. Godoy was tempted to assume momentarily, on a provisional basis, that this could be the explanation. But if this assumption were made, where could he go from there? He agreed heartily with a statement Dr. Pyers had recently made. In Arrigoa TMS case, the prevailing aspects are the objective phenomena. It is much easier to blithely label Arrigoa as a paranoid than to look seriously into what he is doing at TM. These questions were begging for answers. But the information Dr. Godoy was gathering from his less interested colleagues would not help answer the questions. Again, the Medical Association headquarters in Belo Horizonte was stirring restlessly. Dr. Godoy began to regard the situation as a race between possible enlightenment about a rare, incredible phenomenon and the iron-heavy forces of closed minds. The new thrust from the Medical Association was not long in coming. On August 29, 1961, some 3 years after Judge Sawyers had reluctantly notified Arrigoa of President Kubitschek a TMS official pardon, Dr. Fernando Mega Yeloso sat down at his desk in Belo Horizonte to dictate a letter to the Secretary of Public Security of the state of Minas Gerais. Dr. Veloso was president of the Conselho Regional de 141, Medicina of the state, equivalent to a regional office of their American Medical Association. He stated, Senhor Secretario, in line with my responsibilities with the Medical Association, over which I have the honor of presiding, let me bring to the attention of Your Excellency the activities of the well-known citizen José Tilda Copyright Arrigo, relative to the practice of curandirismo a witchcraft. Since this citizen is being widely and publicly accused of such practices that, truly, can threaten and demoralize the rights of the public, I beg Your Excellency to institute the necessary inquiry to determine the facts in the case. If true, the case against José Tilda Copyright Arrigo should be reopened, and a new process begun. I am sure that you will immediately give your attention to this matter. Allow me to extend to Your Excellency my greatest esteem. Within days, the snooping began again. Police investigators began fanning out. The talk from the barbershop and the railroad station had preceded them. They were expected. The detectives received a chilly response from nearly everyone they interrogated. The new probe sprung out of La Fayette, 20 miles away, a safer distance for the authorities to be, at least. The investigators, as before, had a puzzling time trying to get any copies of prescriptions out of the drugstores in either Congonhas do Campo or Belo Horizonte. "Other drugist informed me a TM," wrote one detective, "a that the prescription that one patient of Arrigo at TMS said he would give us could simply not be found anywhere, and must have been lost. If he found it, he would send it RTM." Another had trouble getting any kind of information out of the druggist on the plaza in Congonhas. The druggist swore he had never seen Arrigo at TMS name on any prescription. Arrigo of course never signed them. He never asked a customer about this. He knew nothing whatever about Arrigo, even though he was only a block away. Nearly every witness who could have offered anything of importance dodged and evaded the questions. But event 142, ally the prosecution won the war of attrition and was able to gather ample evidence of Arrigo at TMS having re-established his practice. "A we first noticed a TM," wrote a field detective, "a that everyone was expecting us to arrive. We found several good witnesses, but they did not TMT want to talk and refused to give us any help. But with our careful and expert techniques, we finally broke down the resistance. We conclude that Arrigo is practicing right now, in spite of his denials. Our results will show clearly that he is engaging in illegal medicine, even though he was once prosecuted and pardoned a TM. If the results of the investigation failed to prove the case, it would have been a miracle. The crowds formed every day under the eyes of the police. The prosecution now was aiming hard and straight to prove that Arrigo was practicing witchcraft, not merely illegal medicine." Earlier stung by the rebuff of President Kubitschek at TMS pardon, the authorities were determined to get the much larger penalty that the witchcraft charge would provide. All the new testimony that was elicited was shaped in this direction. If a witness said that Arrigo raised his hand above his head, this was more than the practice of medicine, this was witchcraft, whether it was meant to be or not. If he read the Bible or blessed a patient, that was to be interpreted as witchcraft. Beyond that aspect, the second prosecution was almost a carbon copy of the first. But it took time, and the legal machinery was slow, especially in view of the resistance of the witnesses. The process continued all through 1961, 1962, and far into 1963. As the two full years went by, Arrigo continued practicing almost as if nothing were happening. His denials that he was practicing were based on his firm conviction that it was Dr. Fritz, and not he, who was doing the medical work. This was his justification at this, and his belief that he could not turn down those who needed him. "A they might say I am wrong at TM," Arrigo told reporter Reynaldo Cumanal, "a but I am not wrong in the eyes of God. A lot of friends have come to tell me that they want to help me. I have a special place in my heart for them." But I still pray for my enemies. They are the ones that need more 143, prayer and more love. If they want me to go to jail, they can put me there. If the court wants to charge me with helping the sick, and judge me for that, I will go any time. But I am sure that God will give me freedom. Iatimem not pure, but I try to be. If I carry out charity and if Iatimem accused of the crime of charity, yes, they can take me to jail, and I will stay Iatimem. Meanwhile, Arrigo Iatimem's supporters were not inactive. Over 300 of them signed a petition and presented it to the implacable Judge Sauls. It said that the petitioners came from all social classes, and pleaded with the judge to forgive and forget. It did not fall on fertile ground, and the prosecution continued. By August 1963, the legal process was still creaking along and Arrigo was still practicing, though somewhat mutedly. And it was then that Dr. Henry Puharich and Henry Belk arrived in Congonhas in their microbus, to be among the first North Americans to encounter the phenomenon of Arrigo face to face. After returning to the United States, Puharich and Belk were not inactive on behalf of Arrigo. In their talks with the interested Brazilian doctors before they left Rio, they had been warned that Arrigo Iatimem's capacities were in imminent danger not only from the impending new prosecution, but from the indifference of science in aiding him to discover the source of his strange powers. The sympathetic medical men pleaded with Puharich and Belk to organize an outside study by American doctors that would buttress their own efforts in the face of the formal opposition of the medical societies. But it should be done quickly. Puharich was somewhat of a maverick himself, often defying the sacred tenets of the AMA in his willingness to tackle unknown phenomena. What he could not be faulted on was his scientific proficiency. He had proved himself enough in the hardline school of pragmatic laboratory research and advanced biomedical instrumentation to feel secure and confident in stepping into the unknown waters that lay beyond the norm. What Puharich was to find here affected his life to such an extent that he was later willing to plunge precipitously into further explorations of the paranormal, that some of his supporters could not follow. This, however, could not negate the massive evidence that was piling up in regard to Arrigo Iatimem's work. Neither Puharich nor Belk had any interest in pursuing fantasy. But in Arrigo Iatimem's case, where did reality leave off and the fantastic begin? This was the key question, one that was both difficult to answer and impossible to ignore. If it were ignored, the entire etiology, or root cause, would go begging. Yet any attempt to answer it in terms of Arrigo Iatimem's own theories about Dr. Fritz and his confederates would cause the entire investigation to go up in a cloud of derision. The problem boiled down to proving the obvious. A knife can be painful even when slicing away at a hangnail or wart, to say nothing of scraping a naked eyeball or scooping the eyeball out of its socket in a totally conscious, unanesthetized patient. Yet there was no dispute whatever that Arrigo was doing this daily along with much more complicated surgery. Puharich knew he had to present his findings as convincingly as possible, or his recommendations for the expensive and painstaking research could be laughed off by his associates. Second or third hand reporting by Puharich on something as astounding as Arrigo was not the ideal method of scientific presentation. The scientist must be prepared to challenge, and challenge hard, which is of course healthy. Puharich himself had already challenged Arrigo with his own lipomo operation. On the surface, this would be reasonably good evidence, if not proof, of the worthiness of further study of Arrigo. So were the films. But these still would not be enough for the exacting requirements of scientific journal publication, which demands, in addition to prolific footnote references of past practices and observations, some pragmatic frame of reference on which a theory could be built and accepted. It had taken centuries for acupuncture to be even considered worthy of scientific study. Arrigo Iatimem's practices went so far beyond acupuncture that they almost soared out of sight. Arrigo dealt with raw anguish, desperation, and hopelessness. Pain and disease are the basic reality of those who suffer from them. Here were such people, literally hundreds of them a day, who knew and lived with this intensely horrible reality. They had no other choice. The great majority of those who made the pilgrimage to Arago did not come to him out of curiosity, religious faith, or fetishism. They came because they were literally, practically, objectively, totally hopeless. Modern medicine had given them up, in some cases, the best specialists in the world. Where else could they turn? Although Arago prayed briefly with his patients each day and continually told them to Argo with Goda TM, there was none of the faith-healing aspect or mysticism that accompanied the activity at Lourdes. In most respects, his treatment was as perfunctory and clinical as a resident physician in an emergency room. In their desperation, many would not let themselves accept the death sentence that their doctors had flatly predicted for them. Within their scope, the doctors were right. There was no other objective course for them. Arago offered hope in the face of seeming lack of it. They came to Congonhas do Campo. The overwhelming majority of them were miraculously cured. A small percentage were not, and Arago would not hesitate to tell them he could do nothing for them. Nearly all figured it was worth the risk. It was a great tragedy that the inexorable forces of the law were marshaled against this simple and inexplicable man, thereby threatening to foreclose on any organized study of his work. The stumbling block was the precedent that might be set by letting Arago off scot-free. Without disciplined standards, any impostor could assume the cloak of benignity and presume to do what Arago was doing. He, of course, would not last long. The first thrust of a pocket knife into the eyeball of a suffering patient by an impostor would, in a matter of minutes, bring him abruptly to the police and courts. If Arago had caused pain or injury, he would of course have been out of business in as short a time. Arago a TMS pocket knife or paring knife AI examination a TM, puzzled Dr. Puharich when he had returned to the United States almost more than anything else. Arago did this often. 146, even when the eye looked perfectly normal. It was something never seen in conventional medicine, totally bizarre. He would often scrape out a glob of pus from behind the eyeball, even when there did not TMT seem to be any condition that would warrant it being behind the eye. Puharich suspected that Arago did this maneuver in the eye, stirring the blade so roughly in the eye socket, to dramatize that he could do things for the patient far beyond the normal, and thus build up the confidence of both the patient being treated and those watching and waiting their turn. As part of his experimental work in cardiology, Puharich worked often with Dr. Luis Cortes, a research scientist in the Department of Surgery of the New York University School of Medicine. Before he had drawn up his first report on Arago for a center research associates, Puharich had shown Cortes the films of Arago at TMS operations and filled him in on some of the background. Cortes was fascinated with the surgical work depicted in the film. As a surgeon himself, he simply could not believe that a knife could be inserted into the eye of a conscious person without literally strapping him down and practically raping the eye. It was an assault on the nerves of the patient that positively could not be done. Both he and Puharich decided to make a tentative check of this with some of the laboratory rats they were using with their cardiological research. They each had long experience in handling laboratory animals under the most difficult conditions, and could accurately predict whatever fear or reflex reactions the animal would have under almost any condition. In a normal pattern, if they tried the same technique that Arago had used with his eye probes, the rat would use every muscle in its body to avoid the assault of the knife blade in its eye. Using painstaking care, Cortes held a rat firmly while Puharich tried to insert a small knife under the lid and up toward the sinus cavities. They found that it was literally impossible to do on a conscious, unanesthetized rat unless its head was held in a vise-like grip. And then it was practically impossible to hold the rat still to do any maneuvering whatever, to say nothing of stirring the blade inside the eyelid. Even in an anesthetized rat, it was impossible to emulate the rough crude plunges that Arago executed without seriously damaging the eye tissues. Whatever Arago did was beyond the province of either doctor. But Puharich and Cortes were faced with one more challenge. A young laboratory assistant who had seen the films insisted that she wanted to volunteer to let either Cortes or Puharich attempt to repeat the experiment on one of her own eyes. Neither doctor wanted to accept the challenge. But she kept on insisting, saying that if they were ever to get to the bottom of this mystery, they would have to take some chances. Puharich had taken his chances with the lipomy operation. She was willing to take hers, because she was absolutely absorbed by what Arago was doing, and convinced that it must be solved. Since Cortes was a practicing surgeon, he was at least confident that he could try the experiment without harm, by using extreme care. But the girl must promise to give him a signal at the very first moment of pain or discomfort. She promised that she would. Choosing a small, smooth table knife, and avoiding the iris and cornea of the eye, Cortes very gently began to slide the knife under the lid. She remained stoic and quiet, but only for a fraction of a moment. His first, slow upward movement brought a quick sign from the girl that the pain had become unbearable. The knife was only a fraction of an inch under the lid. He removed it as carefully as he had inserted it, and no harm was done. The knife had gone less than one-tenth the distance Arago TMS blade penetrated, and Cortes had made no lateral or circular movement. The experience convinced all three that they were dealing with an extraordinary case in Arago that would be a mammoth challenge to science. On reviewing Dr. Puharich TMS preliminary report, as well as the separate one filed by Henry Belk, the interest in a full-scale research expedition to study Arago was high among the members of the Acenta research group. Coming as they did from different disciplines and varied organizations, from Stanford University on the West Coast to Massachusetts General Hospital on the East, there were many 148 logistic and time schedule problems. All agreed that further preliminary investigation had to be done to avoid confusion and wasting of time when a full commission of a half dozen or so members took off on the trip. There would be a considerable amount of preliminary reading and study to be done on the subjects of parapsychology, Brazilian customs, and the Portuguese language. Puharich agreed to make another trip to Congonhas for a detailed feasibility survey, and to try to gather statistics that could be used for shaping a well-planned team effort. Just when he could get away from his own research work, now suffering from temporary neglect, was another problem. Yet with the legal action against Arago threatening the potential success of the research expedition, speed was essential. The arrangements were cumbersome, the distances between the members great, and the necessity for funding of paramount necessity. Several foundations were approached, a slow and difficult job. The race to try to uncover the mystery of Arago continued. In Brazil, the legal proceedings were still bogged down in delays. The prosecution that was to lead to a second trial had begun in September 1961, on the urging of the Medical Society of Minas Gerais. When Belk and Puharich had left Congonhas do Campo in August 1963, the legal preparation for the trial was still foundering, chiefly due to inertia, to the resistance of the witnesses, and to the difficulty of documenting new evidence in spite of the fact that Arago was continuing his work under the noses of the police. The people who were benefiting were the last ones who wanted to assist the prosecutor. The news in August 1963 of Arago TMS operation on Dr. Puharich, which had been spread across the front page of nearly every paper in Brazil, provided a fresh impetus to the sluggish prosecution. It was again a case of a success story that would be damaging to Arago. And it was a stinging rebuke to Judge Soares and the prosecutor that the nationally famous operation had happened under the very noses of the police investigators. Although the case had been lying rather dormant at the 149 time, there was action within weeks after the prosecutor read the Puharich headlines. Arago was called up before him. A Dutch Roman Catholic priest by the name of Anselmo Maendres had also seen the headlines, along with the officers of the Medical Society. All were up in arms about this flagrant operation on the American doctor at TMS tumor. A new judge, Marcio de Barros, of apparently the same dour disposition as Judge Soares, had joined forces, and handled the fresh interrogation of Arago. The prosecutor was now Marcelo de Paula, another who seemed to be of the same stripe. Arago reiterated that he bore no malice against those who had testified against him. He freely admitted that he had operated on the American doctor. He also confirmed the other nationwide headline report that he had saved the eyesight of Roberto Carlos Atm's infant son. Since Arrigo claimed these were done on the intervention of Dr. Fritz, and since he had no conscious memory at the time of doing them, Arrigo did not feel they were against the law.